Blog Talk Radio. Provided by bensound.com. Welcome everyone to today's Earth Energy Forecast Show on this Tuesday, September 17th, 2019. Thank you for joining us today, or if you're listening later in the podcast. I am your host, Joan Cirio. Today's show is perfectly timed with the bombing of the oil wells in Saudi Arabia. We are too dependent on fossil fuels, and today's show is about alternative energy sources to these polluting fuels. Today's guest, Jean Manning, is an award-winning writer who has chronicled the lives of inventors of energy breakthroughs around the world for over 30 years. She lives in Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada, with her daughter, granddaughter, and a big backyard veggie garden. Jean's previous books are published in more than 10 countries. Her forthcoming book, Hidden Energy, Tesla-Inspired Inventors and a Mindful Path to Energy Abundance, co-authored with Susan Mainwich of Massachusetts, will be published in October 2019, next month. They can be contacted via their website, hiddenenergy.org. Welcome to the show, Jean.
Thank you, Joan. I'm looking forward to this.
So am I, and this is so timely, and I've been wanting to bring someone on the show to talk about alternative energy sources, and so glad that you could join us today. So you've researched this topic for over 30 years. How did you become interested in this topic?
Well, I was thinking about that. It all boils down to my connection with nature, because I was fortunate to be born near woods and in Alaska, and my school years were spent on a farm in northern Idaho. Again, go play in the woods and breathe the air, the vitality of air that's not polluted, and see the vortexian movements in the streams that I played beside, the waters. I really relate to water a lot, and I really enjoyed your show, by the way, with your friend
Jane Reading, yes.
Yeah, so that's the basis of what actually sparked my interest in really becoming passionate about the topic, because I know that over the years, in various places around the world, I'm sure other journalists had encountered the inventions that actually worked in prototype form to tap into a previously unrecognized source of energy. But there's such a prejudice against it. It's all been marginalized and swept away in the corner and called fringe science, that nobody really took it on as writing books for the general public. And I knew, as a journalist, that I write for the general public well, tell people stories truthfully and conscientiously, and in a manner that's really readable. And so at first I thought that this is just a fascinating field, because I love the stories, but yet I don't know for sure at that time. I hadn't really seen operating over unity inventions, which I'll explain that term later. But at the beginning, I just thought there's a lot of drama here. I'll just tell about this fascinating field that's going on in kind of like energy underground around the world. But then over the years, I have seen prototype inventions that work as promised. And my passion for the environment really kicks in when I realize that my children could be facing a better future than than the current predictions. And the clean air and clean water are so important to their future that and also a healthy economy is so important. And there's so many aspects of the non-conventional energy technologies that could be discussed in all these political forums right now, could be in the news to counter all this focus on the Middle East as such a super important, crucial supply source to our future, which is not true at all. It's not necessary to be burning fossil fuels. It's not necessary. It's not necessary to be talking about building nuclear fission power plants either. These inventions are not far into the future. They're ready to be developed now, and it will just take millions to develop a certain invention rather than billions that these other oil-based solutions are costing society. So there's just a whole wealth of topics to cover once this topic comes out, the main topic comes out into the open and no longer hidden by being ignored. It's a crazy time, but exciting.
Yes. Why do you think, like Nikola Tesla and others that have worked with free energy, why do you think that technology has been so hidden up till now?
Well, follow the money and the huge profits that are made by keeping us dependent on the utility companies and the oil pipelines. It's really a vested interest that's had 100 years to gain strength and to gain powerful inroads into the media on controlling the narrative that politicians speak about and don't speak about, and even what academics are going to look into or not look into when it's a career killer to go and watch a demonstration of a magnetic motor that's putting out apparently violating the laws of physics, but actually not, then they're not going to go there. And if the inventors don't have an ability to get any sort of endorsement from the local university, they can't get funding, they can't get investors interested. If the investors go to the local university and are told, oh, that stuff's impossible, I won't even look at it. So it's really an entrenched, many decades long situation. To the credit of the universities, they have to be more conservative. They have to be careful because there certainly have been inventors who were mistaken about what they thought they had and very sincere but deluded. So there have been those instances in the past in which anybody who invested their time and attention and money in inventors who were mistaken got burned. So there were lots of instances of that. But the fact that the anomalies were not even explored by mainstream science just kept it in the fringe. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done now to look into the various questions that still remain. I mean, you have inventions that seem to mysteriously work, but I'm sure it wouldn't take long with a really well-funded research effort to come up with an understanding, the theories, the explanations, the what's going on in the materials. Are there miniature magnetic whirlwinds going on at a nano scale, or get these questions answered and acknowledged in science journals, the world will be quite different and really a lot more shining future vistas will appear.
Let's talk a little bit about what this real energy is that connects all of life, as you say. There's a lot of different terms for it. What is that energy, and how are they harnessing it?
Okay, as to what it is, that is something that needs to be nailed better. So that's why there are so many terms there, ranging from really discounted terminology such as ether, which a lot of the dissident scientists are actually returning to, because it really is a better terminology than zero-point energy in terms of picturing a background energy of the universe that everything lives and has its being in and is, supports all life. It right down to the atomic level creates the jiggling that goes on at that scale. It's called zero point, which means that at 0 degrees Kelvin, all motion supposedly ceases. It would be extreme cold, as cold as things get, but even at 0 degrees Kelvin, there is still some motion at atomic level. So that motion may be just a symptom of something more primal underlying it, and so the tiny little motions themselves are not as powerful an image, a description, as the underlying background energy of the universe that's described by the bleeding edge scientist like Dr. Paul LaViolette and others who had the courage to investigate anomalies and say, well, this isn't explained by the mainstream model of how the universe works, so we don't have the explanation, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be looking at the questions and do the experiments that create these anomalies. So there is a range of expressions. I really like the term the life force. The scientist Dr. Wilhelm Reich called it orgone, and that has been ridiculed so much that I really don't use it, but I like the sense of what his experiments revealed, which is super important to our understanding of climate. Weather is that there are flows of life force energy in the atmosphere, and some things that we as humans are doing irritate or block cause stagnation in that life force energy. That's the conclusion of Wilhelm Reich's experiments. And if that were investigated more completely, we might have more understanding of what the emissions from nuclear power plants that are supposedly operating perfectly well, but there's still some radioactive particles that are emitted invisibly into the atmosphere, and what causes the and does it actually cause the stagnation of this life force in certain parts of the world where there are all these nuclear fission technologies? Those are the questions that the experiments brought up and that should be of utmost importance to humankind, utmost importance. The role of course, forests and all living things in interacting with this life force and enhancing the health of the waters and the, you know, I too have met Dr. Masaru Emoto and understand that water is certainly so much more than the limited scientific model of it today, or the accepted mainstream model of water. There's so much more going on that does involve something that you can call a life force.
Mm-hmm.
So the new science, Joan, is really exciting. It's so much more in tune with what those of us who love to hang out in nature just sense and feel that there's the invisible part of what's going on everywhere is actually more beautiful and powerful than what we so far have been able to catalog with our senses, and that we at this point don't have scientific instruments to measure this background energy of the universe. But I think that interaction with our technology is coming, because what we can imagine is possible, given that there is a lot of scientific experimental basis for believing that there really is this energy source that has previously been unrecognized. In the past century, science has really gone into a much more mechanistic, just strictly materialistic, which means that only matter matters, worldview. And that's really an anomaly in the whole history of humankind.
Mm-hmm.
As anybody who's studied ancient understandings and the Vedic science and just anyone nowadays who does tune into nature at a more powerful level than just what you're measuring on weighing scales or some other measuring instrument.
Yeah, there's a. Yes, it does. I don't know if it's brand new, but a less conventional theory of the universe, that it's really a plasma universe, meaning that everything is ionized gas. So we really have a sea of electrons, these charged particles. And that's really what makes up everything, and that makes sense, because then everything, of course, we know everything's energy, but if you can harness that and harness it in a way that you can, without putting a lot of energy in, get energy back out, and you've got your energy generators then.
That's it. And I really think that the electric universe theories and experiments make a lot of sense. So that's why there's a whole variety of categories of non-conventional energy technologies, and plasma-based is one of them. But just as you were saying about plasma, what can happen in a plasma, it seems to just be more sensitive or reactive to influences that you don't find in other states of matter. In fact, even more reactive to our own presence, our own biofields, which is another topic. But it is true that there is a lot of crossover between the alternative healing communities' understandings and the new energy field, because maybe we're just all looking at different parts, different manifestations of the same background substance. You know, it's just like that old story of the sightless people and the elephant, called the blind man and the elephant story, where each of them is describing a different part of the elephant and insisting that that's what an elephant is. The one who's grabbing onto the trunk, it's the elephant's a rope. Or the one that's grabbing around, put their arms around a leg, oh no, it's a trunk, like a tree trunk. Or the one who grabs the tail, oh no, it's a really skinny little rope. Or somebody who, when just feeling the underbelly of the elephant, has an entirely different description. So we are still fairly blind as to what it is we're dealing with this ether or universal energy, as we call it in our book, Hidden Energy. There's just a lot that remains, so much that remains to be learned. So I can't give the definitive definition because my degree is in sociology and I'm a journalist, and I very carefully relate what the leading edge scientists have to say, but I wouldn't be teaching a course myself on it. I'm a chronicler of what's going on in this field. But yet, having spent so many years around the experiments and listening to the scientists talk, I really do have a sense of this new science that I know it's a reality, and I know that humankind could be going in a much more peaceful and cooperative way, rather than being divided by oil wars and feeling that we need to protect our interests in a patch of desert in the other side of the world. It's totally unnecessary. It's like we are really blind right now we as a society and species, except, you know, there are the people who, the scientists who had the courage to investigate where others wouldn't go and say, look over here. There's an abundance of clean energy, and it's not that difficult to harness this, that we have the proof of prototype inventions. All we have to do is put some resources into engineering them into products that pass the underwriter's laboratory testing and are handy for people to use. And certainly there's no need to be involved in polluting the earth in any part of the life cycle of these systems that they are describing as possible. And I know somebody who's already partially powering their home with and working on getting that into 100% clean energy powering their home. And I've seen the working prototypes, and I rely on the people who are expert in testing to tell me what I'm seeing. I don't allow myself to be pulled in anymore by someone's story, as I was in the beginning when I first met an inventor, and really, he was on the right track, but he was exaggerating what he had. So it was all a good education. And his enthusiasm for magnetism it was really foundational to my understanding.
So the clean energy you're talking about is more than just what a lot of people know about, like wind or solar energy. You're talking about other forms of energy, correct?
Yes. Wind and solar are great, and actually some of the super efficient motors and generators that the inventors have come up with will enhance the wind industry. But what I'm talking about are devices and systems that work whether or not the sun is shining and the wind is blowing, because they are tapping into a previously unrecognized source of energy. Not everybody in our book is talking about the universal energy. Some of them really pride themselves, and they do too, on explaining what they're doing in terms that are conventional, like the super efficient motor generators, like the work of Paul Babcock, for example, an inventor who says it's just a matter of you know, going from complicated mathematics to an algebra that explains it, and matter of super fast electronic switching, which we now have available and didn't have decades ago, to take advantage of the materials that can create a motor that doesn't have the limitations that have always been said are just go along with building a motor. Or a generator, when you're taking out electricity, then you're going to have the back electric force. And that was always true when you built them conventionally. But when you build with a different geometry to avoid that problem, then you have different results. And this is why what they're doing is revolutionary, because they're not building things just improvements on what has gone before, but rather let's come at this in a different way. And there's also coming at the what to do with breaking up water into hydrogen and oxygen. It really is impossible to have just with standard electrolysis to have an engine run on water, because it just takes more power to break up the water into hydrogen and oxygen than you're going to get out in powering the motor. But we write about in Hidden Energy. We write about, for example, an inventor in Florida who is running engines on water, but it's not electrolysis at all. It's instead micro ball lightning on a micro scale. You know, implosions that are happening that are he doesn't pretend to have the theory, but there's enough clues there that has given a longtime theorist, Maury King, the confidence that what he's doing is actually at the point of those implosions is pulling in the background energy of the universe, and that accounts for the more power output than the apparent input, is because there's some input that is invisible. That's why they say that these systems can do what they say they're doing, which is more power out than the input, which on the surface it's said to violate the laws of physics, but they are operating in an open system rather than the closed systems of the standard motor generators, where you know exactly how much fuel goes in and you can measure exactly the input and exactly the output. But if at some point in the system the background energy, the universal energy, flows in through either permanent magnets used in an innovative way and or other means that they build in the geometry of their systems. So if that power blows in and can't be measured, then that accounts for the mystery, the anomalies. It's not the old discredited perpetual motion inventor that we're talking about. I haven't been writing about someone building a Rube Goldberg contraption and saying, look, you know, I've violated the laws of physics and tricked it. But rather, these people have learned from each other. The internet has made a big difference in the sharing of knowledge internationally. I mean, you know, there's lots of misinformation out there and misguided videos put on YouTube, but there's also been enough sharing of solid information and conferences at which really practical information is shared. So this is why things are different today, why we are in a position to turn to the non-conventional energy technologies and for society to put resources into it and change over peacefully to a clean energy economy.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the term.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Joan. I'm sorry, I talked over you.
You mentioned the term operating over unity inventions. Is that part of what you've been talking about?
Yes, just that term over unity means more power output than the operator put in. It doesn't mean more power output than went into it. But, for example, a magnetic motor generator, the test engineers come along and measure what the operators put in, but yet it is putting out more electrical power than they can account for. Well, then that would, you know, if the test engineer looks all the way through and there's no hidden batteries, there's no way that they could have been tricked. It's the inventor's being totally transparent and showing exactly what's going on inside. It means that there is some input of energy from the universal energy, which creates this over unity. A more respectable term is coefficient of performance, and that's the terminology mm-hmm. that's used by air conditioning engineers to show how a heat pump, for example, can put out more warming your house power than the little bit of electricity that goes in to run it, or your refrigerator. The amount of work that's done in the refrigerator in cooling your food is not necessarily correlated with the amount of electricity it took to run it.
So how do these magnetic generators work?
Okay, there's a lot to be learned about magnets and magnetism and what's going on. But how do they work? I think I would have to be able to describe just one certain invention. And for example, there's a device called the Earth Engine, which uses magnets that are anisotropic. I'm not sure if I pronounced that word correctly, but what it means is that its properties are different depending on the direction that the motion is going or coming from. And that's a concept that's been around for a while. John Bodini, the late John Bodini, is an inventor who had built a flywheel sort of invention that used the magnets in an innovative way. And then a larger version of his invention really blew away a conference back in the 1980s. But those weren't as well documented, but now there's some people, and I haven't seen this particular one, but it's an example. It's called the Earth Engine. I believe it's being built in Scottsdale, Arizona, and it uses this type of magnets that have different properties depending on the different direction. So basically how the magnetic motor generators work is that they are built in such a way that they don't openly go head-on against the laws of physics, but rather get around this what's called Lenz's law, the back electromotive force, by just being built in a way that avoids it. And that's the best explanation I can give over radio. and there's magnets that self-resonate. And now I'm thinking with the use of magnets in solid-state devices, which can put out more power than the little bit of electricity that it takes to get them started. And they rely on getting something going called motional magnetic fields. Certain materials, maybe conditioning barium ferrite magnets to self-resonate when they're hit with specific frequencies. So what a solid-state device is just something that apparently no parts are moving. You know, you don't see any moving parts, but it's actually going on at a molecular level. You know, there's no rotor or wheel going around, and no gears and pulleys and belts and pistons, and no fans or bearings. It just looks like an electronic circuit board. But what's going on is some use of the principle of resonance, and to be able to take the scattered randomly moving background energy and sort it into something that moves in one direction and then becomes a force, electric force. So, you know, the basis of it all is you know, pretty basic to childhood physics. Whenever a magnetic field is moving, electricity is generated.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's. I like the thought of having something in my house that's just sitting there and nothing is apparently moving, and no rotor going around, so no noise. But rather, something is going on that you've started with these special magnets that can create the motional electric fields or motional magnetic fields. I mean, and be able to power something. I so far haven't seen a solid-state device that does any more than prove the principle that it's possible. But there, so far I've just seen the ones that in a small way can demonstrate the principle, but that aren't really running any appliances. However, there was an inventor, Floyd Sweet, who unfortunately took all his secrets to the grave, but he had worked for many years with General Electric. He was really top in his field of knowing about working with magnetics. And he did build a device that was witnessed by a scientist. And he claimed that the output to input ratios were something like 1,000,000 to 1, but I know that they were at least 500 to 1, based on the scientists that visited him. So they just taking advantage of some built-in instability within maybe the barium atoms. And then it didn't end with the death of Floyd Sweet, because a man named Arthur Manilis, in more recent years, back east in the U.S., did run a car on that type of device. And before Arthur Manilis' death, one of the people that visited him was Dr. Brian Ahern, who was able to be in on a test drive and measure what was going on. Battery capacity increased while they went on the drive for 25 miles rather than decreased. And it really, really, really mystified Dr. Ahern, and probably somebody with a little bit less courage than him would have run in the other direction rather than risk his, he's a very highly credentialed scientist, but he's one of the what I consider the heroes and heroines who stay around and investigate And because he happens to be an expert on what happens with ferrite particles, which is what magnets are made of, in a certain range, the nano range, a particle size, he has a theory about where magnetic vortices arise, like miniature whirlwinds. So he just concludes that at that range of particle size, the particles operate by a different set of rules. And that case is not closed, even though Arthur Manalis died suddenly just before he was going to show everything of the insides of his invention to Dr. Ahern. But there are others who are, you know, carrying on the research to find out how he did what he did. Arthur Manalis didn't leave a circuit diagram or notes about how to operate, but he was intending to reveal everything. And then he had a brain aneurysm and never recovered and died. But that knowledge is continuing on. And there are others in other parts of the world who have nailed it and have something that's working. And it's a matter of how to bring that out to the public in a way that's safe for the inventor and ethical. My co-author, Susan Manimich, is really on the leading edge of making sure that happens. She's started along with an engineer from the UK, a foundation to focus on that aspect of bringing this out in a matter that is win-win for everyone, not just somebody's going to buy this up and a lot of people are going, or a certain number of people are going to make big fortunes, but rather let's do this wisely. This is what the general public needs to get in on the discussion of, and decision makers and politicians and economists and the best thinkers in our society need to be talking about how do we make this shift to the energy abundance in a way that benefits all life.
Mm-hmm. So it's really a grassroots.
Yes.
Effort. Mm-hmm.
And if it's not coming next week or anytime soon from vested interests or even academic institutions that are funded by vested interests, then the public has to create a level of let's educate ourselves and demand that we have a peaceful changeover, that we have a changeover that's going to create jobs for everyone that's able to work, a changeover that is not going to be used for further leveling of ecosystems, but rather restoring ecosystems. You know, you could restore waterways, clean up waterways with abundant energy. You could recycle materials that right now aren't really economically feasible to recycle because they're so energy intensive, takes so much electricity to, say, melt them down. There's all sorts of planet restoration projects that can go on with more abundance. And it's so important that it not be corporatized or militarized, in my point of view.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's really important for each of us to educate ourselves and to start to demand these things from the government, from our corporations, to make the change.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, it's an interesting time when people are seeing urgency for change, urgent need for change, but there's just so much information that they need to have to not despair about the future, but rather say, oh, yes, it is possible. Because, of course, vested interests, for example, the oil industry, it's in my province of British Columbia where I live, it's, and in Alberta next door particularly, it's the message is that we have to choose between the environment and jobs. And that's not true at all, not at all. And unfortunately, that's kind of a national message, even on our national radio, the all the doubt and fear that's planted by the people that are interviewed and saying, well, we have to have our oil pipelines. Of course we have to provide jobs to people, and of course we have to take care of the people whose work will be different in the future, who won't be working in an oil patch, and they need training. But a society that doesn't have to import foreign oil, build pipelines, build nuclear power plants, do all those expensive things, fight oil wars, keep a huge military presence wherever oil is being transported or drilled. That society can afford to do things right, to do right by people.
Yeah, not to mention all the spent fuel well rods that we don't know what to do with anymore from the nuclear power plants.
Yeah, you asked what got me started, and I just talk about the very basis of my love of nature, but the things that keep me going on such a strange journey by other people's standards is, well, for one thing, the oil spill on my birthplace, the waters of Prince William Sound, when the Exxon Valdez spilled its guts of oil, and the Gulf of Alaska, well, Prince William Sound particularly just has never totally recovered. The herring fishery never totally recovered. That was so I had, a startup. It was such pristine waters nearby. And then there's also what the nuclear power experiments or nuclear bomb making too that did in my own family. We lived on a farm in northern Idaho, and at some time, maybe 1950s, Hanford Nuclear Reservation released a cloud of radioactive particles, invisible to everybody, of course, that drifted across the state of Western, across North Idaho and up into Canada. And for decades, people didn't know about what had happened. But eventually, some people that call themselves downwinders because of their health problems that resulted started investigating and found out about that release that was never announced to the public. And in my own family, at the time that would have happened, my younger sister was a baby, and she and my mother were drinking a lot of milk. The cows were eating the grass that the radioactive particles fell on. And both my sister and my mother have had cancer and thyroid problems. And my mother passed away from cancer. But, in general, the radiating technologies just repel me because I know that there are alternatives that just aren't being explored. Vested interests become so dependent on having continuation of their industry that people don't get the information about the realities.
Yeah.
That's my soapbox.
So sorry to hear about your mother. And, you know, when things happen like that to us, we really do take it to heart, and it motivates us to make change. And this is one of the reasons I started the radio show, to get information out there of what's happening right now, and that we can change, and we need to come together. And information is power. So
You're getting a lot of power out there. I listened to a couple of your shows, and I particularly resonated with the one about water. You know, all the topics that you're covering relate to what's going on in our times, when things are and will be changing drastically.
Very rapidly.
We need to be ready.
Yes.
People will need portable energy generators. They will need to be able to have heat and you know, the basics of life situations where they're cut off from the aging electric power grid, which is not really necessary either. That, you know,
it's
not necessary for society.
Tesla proved that, yeah.
yeah, putting money
it's
into
really
the aging
archaic.
Electric grid. Yeah. I was talking over you. What did you say, Joan?
I was just saying it's really archaic when you think about it, because if we can tap into the energy of where that surrounds us, that is us, why do we need to go outside of us to bring any power?
Exactly. Oh, that's a metaphor too, you know?
Yeah.
Why do we have to go outside of
ourselves? Outside of ourselves, yes, exactly. I meant it that way.
Well, there are these whole aspects. You know, you can get into the settler realms. The consciousness, whole consciousness topic is something that my co-author and I are just deeply interested in, and how humankind being immersed in this field of universal energy can interact with it. So some of the theorists that we write about do get into the deeper esoteric parts, but still try to keep our book very readable to the general public, but just touch on the fact that that there are some really high credentialed scientists who acknowledge that there's a lot more going on than the materialistic, mechanistic, scientific model acknowledges. And again, it presents a possible, beautiful, the possibilities for humankind are not, we don't have to have a Mad Max future at all. There's an alternative. You know, we're going to go through challenges, definitely, this time of change and turmoil is not going to just miraculously disappear, but the more we understand about what we are and this background energy, which some of the theorists point to a consciousness, a living aspect to this background energy. Wow. there's some really interesting horizons.
Yes, and it's so timely, and it is tied to the consciousness, and as we raise our consciousness, we see that when we work in harmony with nature and with what is, and we truly realize the truth of who we are and our energetic makeup and the energetic makeup of the universe, then it's easy, it's simple, even though we've made it so complicated. Now we're going backwards, you know, so now we got to rewind the clock. And that's what takes the time.
But it does. It's a whole re-education, I'm sure that there will be people who resist a different paradigm.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're so immersed. I mean, I'm resisted to the end of their lives because they're so immersed in being experts in the old paradigm, or if not experts, then just being knowledgeable. You know, like a lot of people who read science books and aren't necessarily credentialed scientists themselves, but pride themselves on their knowledge of science. Even those people will find it hard to say, "Oh, well, I guess I missed something there too." That's not easy to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
If they look at the benefits to looking through a different lens at the universe, some of them will change.
Mm-hmm. We're definitely entering a time of great change, and I've had shows about it, and Dr. Paul LaViolette talks about the galactic superwave. I'm going to talk about it actually this Saturday in a talk I'm giving. But, you know, they say necessity is the mother of invention. And what's coming, you know, is really going to necessitate these alternative energy sources to be put to use. And I think your book is very timely. It's very needed. And I'm very excited about it. I'm excited about this. The more information we put out there, the fact that we know that these cycles are coming and have approximate time frames, I think really empowers us that we can then, you know, okay, what can we do? How can we mitigate, not only on a physical energetic level, but also on a spiritual level, you know, in going into our power and what powers do we have when we come together in unity. And that's really what this show is about. I wanted to ask you about the Avalon Alliance. What is that?
Okay, that's an organization based here in Kelowna that has a platform of having figured out all sorts of aspects of how eco projects, as eco villages, can proceed forward. It goes beyond just other advice that's available out there to such projects, and it goes beyond standards like, you know, the LEED standard for house building or buildings, which are all good, but it goes beyond in a holistic understanding. So that's why I enjoy being associated with Avalon, is because it's a mixture of people who are down-to-earth practical, like the founder whose background is a regional planner and knows how to work in bureaucracies, but also is aware of non-conventional alternatives, and went to the energy conference I went to this summer with me. And there's also on the management team a woman who is the former mayor of our city, Kelowna, and someone from the indigenous community, just people who are new paradigm thinkers. And so that they'll have a website up probably, I would say, later this month, because it's under construction, will be avalonalliance.org. And so there, anybody interested can find out more about them there. I wonder what I could bring. Well, it's because they are really interested in the new energy. I can be a liaison there for that part. And I'll just be part-time, because this my other passion takes probably will go on for the rest of my life too, is keeping in touch with the inventors and what's going on in that community. It's definitely my passion. And there's so much to be said, so much to write about. I hope to be better about updating hiddenenergy.org, our books website, so that we can have news items on there. There's a lot of work to be done. And it's fun because it's not just spreading the gloom and doom news, but spreading the, well, there are solutions.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about your book?
Okay, Hidden Energy. Oh, I'm having a little problem here. I just have to drink some water here. Okay, it's meant for the general public, and my interest in telling the stories of inventors gets full rein in there, as does Susan's interest in, and which I share, in the important ethical aspects and the what she calls moral technology, which was a term that Rudolf Steiner used. So what Paul LaViolette said about our book was that it kickstarts a public dialogue. And he said, come learn about an energy revolution that will transform the world. So it's a primer, you know, everybody's guide to the clean energy revolution. But it goes beyond that to talk about the different aspects that the public and people in the spiritual thought community, all sorts of backgrounds, people from all sorts of backgrounds, can find something that they need to know about what's possible for our future. It's also been called a primer for the New Energy Movement. Susan will be very active in that because she's president of the New Energy Movement. So it's giving the information that the public needs to have about this unlimited sea of energy everywhere in the universe. We don't pretend to be the theorists about it, but we do give a lot of, you know, there's hundreds of footnotes and a lot of places where people can look up more technical part of things. We just try to make the technical part really understandable for the general public.
That's great. What is this new energy movement you were talking about?
This is a focused on public education. New energy movement in the U.S. was founded by Dr. Brian O'Leary in the early 2000s. He was in the Apollo astronaut program and a physicist who taught at the Ivy League universities and became a dissident scientist when he saw anomalies that weren't being explained and you know, became interested in things like the consciousness connection and was exposed to in meeting some of the inventors that were active in that time. And then he passed the baton on to Joel Garvin, an industrial scientist in Portland, Oregon, who was the president for about 10 years, and Joel's work kept him quite busy. But before he got that busy in his job, he organized just a really interesting conference at Portland State and Reed College in Portland for the general public. So he knew the importance of educating people about the possibilities for an energy technology revolution. And then Joel passed the leadership on to Susan Manowich, my co-author, and she, her background is in leadership consulting and emotional intelligence and resonant technologies and human dynamics, so he knew that it was in good hands with her. She has gotten together a really excellent board of directors, and that rejuvenated New Energy Movement is I think the new website is launched now.
And that website would be New Energy Movement. Is it a .org or?
I believe it is.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. NewEnergyMovement.org. She will be MC at the Global Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference in the Netherlands in November. And that's a group with the same aims of getting the information out to the general public. And that group started in Europe, I think, about 2012. I was at their first conference. So this is not just a North American phenomenon. This is international. This is global citizens becoming aware of possibilities that have been hidden from mainstream view. You know, you get glimpses like that Earth Engine that I mentioned that they're building in Arizona. It was mentioned in, I believe, the Wall Street Journal, the inventor Dennis Stanzik and his work, and of course mentioned in a context of there's lots of questions that haven't been answered yet. So that when I know that the times are changing when we actually are having something that's on the market. And again, I can't say that I'm endorsing the Earth Engine, because the people that I look to for vetting these technologies haven't yet visited and seen that in person. But I have had some pretty good reports about the possibilities.
Wonderful. So is there anything else you'd like to share with us, Jean, before we end the show?
Well, I'd like to say that I went on and on about the technologies, but really that's just because there's so much to bring people up to speed on about what are you talking about with this new energy? Let's picture what some of these technologies are, you know, magnet motors, solid-state devices, water as fuel. But the important part, in our opinion, Susan Manowich and I, is the part of how it affects people and how it's going to be brought out. It's not going to be buried, because the military interests have already been investigating, and you know, you hear stories about technologies that have been developed by the black budgets. We don't have the in that group, or not. I don't have a foot in that door to be able to check out the facts of that matter. But it is a fact that's in our faces that people from all sorts of backgrounds are coming to the conferences about the non-conventional energy technologies. And it's obvious that there's a kind of a race to be the one who's going to bring this out to the public and announce an invention and kind of be the most important in the world. And our point of view is that this is collaborative. It's not, let's just look to one person to be our savior, but rather people. There are people in different parts of the world and different sectors that are working on this, and the more collaboration, the better. And getting the decision makers in all sorts of fields involved in discussing the implications of this really dramatic energy revolution, and who will benefit from it? Will it be grabbed up by corporate interests and who buy up in patents and rights, won't let other people just build their own, or will it be brought out in a way that's just and fair to all sectors of society? Will it be used to clean up the environment with the new technologies, the powerful energy technologies be used to help get rid of pollution in rivers and make sure that no more pipelines are built to spill into rivers. You know, it's just huge questions about changes in point of view and changes in corporate versus individual rights. There's just so much to be discussed, and I think as long as we've given corporations personhood, which is really obscene, because a corporation by its very definition is set up to just maximize profits for its shareholders, which doesn't make them evil. It just makes them not really what I would call a person. This is not about having some corporation which has all the high-tech, artificial intelligence, intelligence gathering, data gathering capability to be ruling the world in a different way. It's about empowerment for ordinary people to improve their lives, and it's just by the term free energy is by definition that it should be freely available to people.
Yes.
So anyway, those are the sorts of questions that mm-hmm. we hope that people will start discussing.
It would definitely revolutionize the world.
Mm-hmm. And totally like Elizabeth Rauscher said, Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher also gave us an endorsement for our book before she left this world, and she said incorporating the spiritual nature of reality is extremely important. So she was pleased that is in the book. Yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Jane, for being on the show today. Jean, for being on the show today. I really enjoyed it. This is information that is absolutely critical. And again, her book, Hidden Energy, Tesla Inspired Inventors in a Mindful Path to Energy Abundance, can be purchased at hiddenenergy.org, or you can go to Amazon. It'll be up there next month and available to you. Thank you so much again, Jean, for joining us. And speaking of spiritual things and spirituality, next week's show, we're going to switch gears a little bit. And Ann Elbers, who is a popular author and spiritual instructor and angel communicator and modern mystic, will be on to share about how the earth needs your love. So please join us next week for that. Thank you again, Jean. And thank you, everyone, for listening today. I hope you enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, and much love to everyone.